Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. I'm the Compliance Evangelist, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 374 of the FCPA Compliance Report. The FCPA Compliance Report is a part of the Compliance Podcast Network. This episode is sponsored by the Complete Compliance Handbook. It is my new one-volume compendium of all things compliance. It is the one-volume, one-stop book that you can go to that will help you in the creation, implementation, and enhancement of a best practices compliance program. The book is currently available now on a pre-publication basis on my website, www.fcpacompliancereport.com. It will be published in April by Compliance Week. Today I have with me for the podcast, John Davis. John is a member at Miller & Chevalier, and we discuss the firm's 2016 winter FCPA report. John looks at the themes from 2017, and we take a veiled look into the future of where FCPA enforcement and compliance may be going. It's a fascinating exploration that I think you will enjoy and find very useful in your compliance practice. This is Tom Fox. Thanks for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode. Today, you are in for a real treat because I have with me John Davis. John is with Miller & Chevalier, and he is one of the, if not author, certainly participants in putting together Miller's excellent annual quarterly review. And this episode, we're going to focus on the FCPA Winter Review 2018, which took a look at some of the key trends from 2017 and looks forward into 2018. So, John, I really wanted to thank you for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you having me.
So, one of the things, John, that clearly was on the minds of compliance practitioners about 15 months ago was what was going to happen under a Trump administration? Did Donald Trump's personal thoughts on the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act mean much? We had a new attorney general who perhaps was an unknown quantity or quality around the FCPA, although I would say he was probably viewed as a pro-prosecution sort of guy. I think many people were considering what would be the theme of 2017, and I think Miller really has identified some of the themes from last year and going forward. And I was wondering if we might be able to explore those issues, starting with really, what was some of the key themes that you saw in 2017?
Sure. I think that's right. I think a lot of folks, based on public statements, both by candidate Trump and by others who have now joined the administration, including the Attorney General, including Jay Clayton, the SEC chair, who had criticized the FCPA in the past as well. There were lots of folks who were wondering how the course of FCPA enforcement was going to potentially morph or change in 2017. And really, looking at the evidence from 2017 that we summarize in the winter review, I think the bottom line is that the Trump administration, despite some of those statements early on, has really not radically changed the pace or the fundamental nature of FCPA enforcement. Indeed, various senior officials on both the DOJ side and the SEC side have continued to repeatedly emphasize the commitment of both agencies to enforcement of the FCPA. And I think while there was a gap a bit in the middle of the year with regard to announced enforcement actions, by the end of the year, looking back on 2017, it's clear that this year was a fairly average year. That is one in which several trends, which I'll talk about in a minute, continued, and one in which I think we can comfortably conclude, at least for now, that the pace and nature of FCPA enforcement by the agencies is going to continue in the way it has the last few years, and therefore compliance personnel need to continue to focus on this as they have been. And so I see really three trends that we talk about in the review that are continuing trends from the previous administration and that I think will continue to be apparent in 2018. The first is that both agencies continue to highlight the fact that they're going to go after individuals, culpable individuals, whether or not there's a corporate settlement involved in any of these actions. For example, this year, the DOJ especially put its money where its mouth is by bringing 17 FCPA-related charges during 2017, which matches its record from 2009, and then got 13 pleas or convictions, which is really an all-time high for them, again, in the FCPA-specific area. The SEC has talked some of that game, although they only have 4 judgments this year. But I think based on what I've seen in my practice and what I think others have seen as well and observed, that the SEC is focused on this area as well. And so companies will continue to need to worry about the possibility that their employees or others will be chased, whether or not there's a corporate investigation or disposition going on. And that really leads in part to the second point, which is, as everyone knows, the FCPA, new FCPA corporate enforcement policy was announced late last year. And the DOJ is operating under the rules of that policy. And indeed, this year has already made several declinations that I think are pursuant to that policy. And we cover a few of those in our review. And really there, that policy is a continuation in many respects of the pilot program that the FCPA unit put in place a couple of years ago, and really gives some more formality to that program, while at the same time having many of the same requirements for companies to benefit from that program. And there are really 3 requirements that the policy requires companies to have in place in order to receive the presumption of declination under the program. Number 1 is full and timely self-disclosure. Number 2 is full cooperation, and that's always the trick, as many of you know, that includes the company effectively giving information on their potentially culpable employees, and that can create real issues within a company. And sets up some problematic dynamics sometimes between company counsel and individual counsel, as some have seen and as I've experienced in my own practice. And then finally, timely and appropriate remediation of any issues. And that includes not only, of course, firing or discipline of culpable personnel, but also having in place an appropriate an adequate compliance program. And one thing that's doing right now is there's been a number of cases recently where monitors have not been imposed. And I think that's really because many companies are realizing that they need to get their house in order if they're under investigation and get a compliance program in place in order to try to avoid the possibility of that monitorship. And I think the enforcement policy gives further impetus to doing that if you find yourself under investigation. The last trend I think we talked about is really the trend again toward that has been identified for several years, which is large globally coordinated settlements are happening in which the U.S. is sometimes no longer even the main player. So you have, for example, the largest settlement related to bribery in the world is the one with Odebrecht and Braskem. That was not led by the U.S., although the U.S. participated, of course. The Brazil prosecutors took the lead there, and there are a number of other cases that have been discussed and covered recently, including the Keppel case, Rolls-Royce case, the Telia case, SBM, all of which involved one or more enforcement authorities beyond the U.S. authorities, and indeed many of which ended up with the companies paying penalties to non-U.S. enforcement authorities, perhaps in excess of what they were paying to the U.S. And so that means that, of course, coordination of a global investigation becomes much more difficult. You've got agencies in these countries, some of which have gained some experience in this area, but some of which are still pretty new at it, many of which are operating under some different rules as regard to important things like attorney-client privilege, data privacy restrictions that may or may not hamper investigations, and so forth. And indeed, possibly in some cases, even whether there's an appropriate level of rule of law, as it were, in place, such that you can rely on getting appropriate due process, at least in the way we understand it here in the U.S., from some of these agencies. And all that plays into things in a way that was not really the case even more than 5 years ago. So I think that's continuing. And indeed, you see, even though in the early part of this year, we haven't had any big cases yet, there have been a number of settlements. For example, Airbus has settled with the German authorities for almost $100 million. And there's been other settlements in related cases that continue to show that, again, the companies need to not only worry about the DOJ and the SEC, but about many other enforcement authorities.
So, John, let me see if I can unpack some of those specific points. And I'd first like to start with the trend about, or rather, the trend of actions against individuals. And we saw, I thought, some really stunning individual criminal indictments and guilty pleas in the Q4 of last year. We saw two SBM executives plead guilty. We saw four individuals plead guilty in the Rolls-Royce scandal. We saw a former Embraer executive plead guilty to participating in a bribery scheme. And then near the end of the year in December, we saw a senior member of the Keppel Legal Department plead guilty. And I guess one of the things I've wondered is, here in the fall of 2017, we had these, I thought, just stunning stunning results. Did you see that in any way as a following or a follow-on from the Yates memo back in September of 2015, where the Department of Justice really emphasized that they wanted to companies to turn over information on individuals?
I think it's hard to draw a direct causal connection, but I think there's certainly been a lot of pressure, both that has been talked about by many folks about the push by the DOJ, especially, to get information on individuals, which then allows them to put together cases and to put together successful cases. And as you say, fourth quarter 2017 showed that they had a lot of successful cases there. I think. So I think there is some cause and effect there. I think that it's the kind of thing where in some cases, my guess is the information that allowed the DOJ to put those cases together would have come perhaps without the impetus of the Yates memo requirements. But I think certainly in other cases, it's probable that companies provided the type of information that might not have been provided a few years ago, pre-Yates memo, in order to allow DOJ to get those cases to a place where they need to be, either to settle or accomplish plea, I should say, or to or indeed to pursue convictions. And I think you see that their record has gotten a little better, at least in the short time. You compare it to what happened to them a few years ago in the SHOT Show cases and some of the other cases where they weren't as successful, especially when they actually went to trial.
The announcement in late November by Rod Rosenstein of the new FCPA corporate enforcement policy, I think, was just a very interesting bookend to the year and end of the year in a very dynamic and dramatic way. I have focused on that document from the compliance professional and compliance program perspective, but it had much broader implications, and you touched on several of those in your early remarks. But I was wondering, in your mind or in your discussions with your colleagues, have you felt that the new FCPA corporate enforcement policy changes your calculus on advising a client to self-disclose or not?
It's an interesting question. I think I'm not sure it changes it much as between that and the prior pilot program. I think that there is a suggestion, of course, that if now the declination is a presumption rather than under the pilot program, it was something that was going to be effectively considered. Might lead some folks to make the choice to self-disclose in a way that they might not decide to do so before. I think there are certainly many cases in which that is what a company should do and where we might advise the company to do that. I think there's still it doesn't mean it's automatic necessarily. There still could be countervailing issues that might lead a company to decide not to do that. But I think it's obvious the DOJ has been and is continuing to push very hard for that. And what's interesting too is also you see where, for example, full disclosure did not get credited in a couple of the cases we have this time around, SBM being one, where I think they did not get the disclosure credit. And it's hard to see everything from the public documents, of course, which is all we have access to. But it's pretty clear that SBM did not get that credit, in part because it was not clear to DOJ when they settled or when they declined the original case back a couple of years ago that there was the level of U.S. related involvement that is discussed in the newer case. And I think that is an example where it's pretty clear the company did not fully self-disclose everything that it needed to and didn't get the benefits of at the time would have been the pilot program, but now would be the policy. And so I think companies do have to consider that risk is there. And so it's not just whether to disclose, but how much and what to disclose that companies need to be thinking about and that we help companies get through, because there are times where you make a disclosure and it doesn't necessarily count, either because there's already public information out there, the agencies have heard it from somebody else, such as a whistleblower, or the agencies find out more later based on the internal investigation, say, that the company did, and they basically say to the company, you should have told us this before when you made the initial disclosure, and therefore we're not giving you the credit that now the enforcement policy says we should give you. So it's both whether and how much. Those are all factors that play into disclosure at this point.
On your theme around large multinational settlements, there was a couple of different avenues that I wanted to explore. The first one was, I think we've seen actually individual prosecutions also along these same lines, because in the TILA FCPA enforcement action international anti-corruption enforcement action from September, we saw the Swedish authorities prosecuting the former CEO of Telia individually. So, but that really leads into my next question is, in your dealings with the U.S. regulators, be it Department of Justice or Securities and Exchange Commission, are you able to communicate with them about other regulators? Meaning, is there sort of one avenue that you can go through in representing a client, or are you having to deal with multiple regulators in multiple countries to come up with what Kara Brockmeyer called the one pie approach?
Yeah, I think there's not a clear one-stop shop, as it were, with the DOJ and SEC. They obviously do have a fair amount of say and influence, but I think increasingly, as I referred to before, they're not necessarily always in the driver's seat. In my personal experience, we have also interacted with some of these other authorities. Of course, you need to. I'm a U.S. lawyer. So we also need to have appropriately barred professionals in the jurisdiction where we're operating, who are also in the room, of course, to manage those interactions. But I think companies are right now still are in a place where they're the ones that have to manage that process. And DOJ, in my experience, and the SEC can be helpful, but also can sometimes, I don't want to say be a hindrance, but sometimes have their own investigational priorities or other priorities that get in the way of being able to do, for example, something you may want to do with another group of authorities. And so you have to really, the key there is coordination. But I think it's incumbent right now on the company to be the locus of that coordination. And unfortunately, it means that the company is responsible for that, but they're not always in control of that, because you do have the agencies at the same time talking to each other outside of all of the back and forth that's going on with the company. And so, it is you know, this process has been criticized, and I think rightly so, in the sense that that it's difficult, and it's more difficult than it used to be because of all the parties involved and because of the sometimes conflicting priorities that play into this. Unfortunately, like I say, right now, there is no forum that a company can go to try to get all this resolved. And so the company is left itself basically paying for and having various counsel in all the relevant jurisdictions try to manage this process. And I think, again, the DOJ and the SEC recognize that this has to happen and will, in my experience, be helpful when they can. But sometimes they can't be because they have their own investigation priorities as well.
So let me now turn to the veiled land of the future, John. Do you see these trends continuing? Do you see any new trends on the horizon? You mentioned some large, at least international anti-corruption settlements, if not FCPA settlements. Or do you see the Department of Justice really consolidating some of the changes they made from 2017 and moving forward? Now we're almost to the end of Q1 in 2018.
Excuse me. Yeah, I think many of these trends will continue. I think it'll be interesting to see. Again, there's not been any big cases that have been announced so far, although I think we can predict that there'll be some coming. I think the multinational cases will continue to play a big part of this. And indeed, we, in our review for any who have read past versions, introduced a new tracking chart in which we're tracking global resolutions that involve the FCPA as opposed to just FCPA resolutions. And I really think we thought about that as an equally appropriate indicator of where the overall enforcement climate is going and the multinationalization of that climate being much more important than it used to be. And I think that will continue. I think that you will see potentially more formal declinations than we have in past years, at least more announced ones, as the corporate enforcement policy takes effect. And as companies really focus in on its requirements and are able to, Now that it's been out for a few months, I think if you have an investigation that starts today, companies do have a clearer picture of what they need to be doing in order to at least have a good chance to fulfill the presumption of declination than they may have had before, even under the pilot program. So I think you'll see more of those. The question will be whether that means there will be fewer DPAs, NBAs, and other settlements. Whether it changes the balance overall of where enforcement is going. And I think that'll be something that everyone, including us, will be tracking pretty closely over the next year, maybe a couple years to really decide what the actual trend is there. I think those are the big ones. And I think the DOJ continues to evolve and continues to, there's some cycling through in terms of the key personnel in the criminal division, the fraud section. I don't think that's really hampered them up to this point, and I don't foresee that being a problem for future investigations, but it's something that is worth tracking as well.
So, as you may know, I really focus on compliance programs and sort of the nuts and bolts of compliance programs. And obviously, those are important for both preventing and detecting a violation. But you really spoke, John, in your remarks about the new FCPA corporate enforcement policy as a renewed or greater emphasis on the compliance program, particularly the remediation step if a company finds itself in an investigation or enforcement action. Do you see this trend of really additional pressure on the corporate compliance program to continue in terms of importance?
I do, and I think companies are recognizing it as well. I think you may have seen this too. In your own practice or inquiries from folks, we are certainly seeing more and more companies thinking through this lens. That is, thinking about not only what their compliance program needs to do to prevent and detect issues, but also in terms of what, if they do get in trouble, what they need to show to the agencies, DOJ, SEC, or even now other agencies in other countries, what they need to show in terms of why their compliance program is an effective compliance program. And so we indeed have had a number of engagements recently where we've been asked to look at a company's program through that lens. And of course, it's a lens that marries up pretty nicely with all the hallmarks that you and I both focus on when we're evaluating compliance programs for their general effectiveness anyway. But I think it allows, for example, compliance officers to be able to go to their managers to say, this is yet another reason why we need to have an effective program in place and we need to be thinking about it through this lens. And even in some cases, we've had a couple of companies that have come to us and say, we're worried we're going to have an investigation or we're in an investigation. And we want to prevent, we either want to qualify for the policy or at least we want to prevent getting a monitor. And so we want to do right now an exercise where basically we, Miller and Chevalier, or an outside advisor comes in and basically does what a monitor might be doing anyway, which is to take a look at the policy or take a look at the program and evaluate it from the lens of, say, an independent monitor, such that the company can then put into place anything it needs to do to remediate any gaps in order to inform a settlement discussion with the agencies or to, again, qualify under the corporate enforcement policy for that particular requirement that is having an effective compliance program in place. And so I think it's, programs are fundamentally important as risk mitigation tools, whether or not you've got an investigation or are worried about an investigation, and you know that better than I. But I think the enforcement policy gives compliance officers another tool to tell management why these types of programs need to be in place and why the company needs to stay current on them in order to effectuate continuous improvement, because the standards are continuing to evolve. And if a company gets caught short in an investigation, they're not going to be able to qualify for, this presumption of declination that is in place now.
So I've been visiting with John Davis. John is a member at Miller & Chevalier. He has a focus on international regulatory compliance and enforcement issues with over 20 years experience in advising both U.S. and non-U.S. clients on anti-corruption issues literally around the world. He has investigated FCPA cases. He's sat across the table from the government. He has helped companies put together and implement internal compliance programs in a wide variety of different settings. We've been exploring the Miller & Chevalier FCPA Winter Review 2018. I highly commend it to any of our listeners. I'm certainly going to link to it in the show notes. John, I really would like to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me today. It's been a fascinating exploration of not only where we were in 2017, but where we may be going forward. So I look forward to continuing the conversation. This is Tom Fox again. I'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. If you have any questions on the FCPA Compliance Report, you can email me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes, I would appreciate it if you would rate our podcast, as it would help in our rankings and help get the word out about the longest-running FCPA compliance podcast around. Finally, for more information on my new book, The Complete Compliance Handbook, go to my website, www.fcpacompliancereport.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report, and I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Tom Fox. The FCPA Compliance Report is a part of the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.